Good morning. My name is Candace Moore. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Mike. What a kind thing to say. You know, what a pleasure to be here in Fort Lauderdale. I got my summer hair going on. It's just a good deal. And, you know, my friend, my best friend, Calithia, is here. And, you know, we're like thinking, Florida, ooh, let's do hair. You know what I mean? And so really, just, I'm just in the zone right now is what's happening. And, you know, but thank you guys for waking up and coming to hang out with me for the next hour. I appreciate it. It's an honor and a privilege to be invited here. It's a good deal. I'm a drunk. Hardcore. Period. Don't do wine coolers. Don't understand the concept. You know? And I'm the type of drunk that can have hopes and dreams, but if you don't bring them within a 3-block radius, we're just not going to know about them. So, you know, it's always nice when I have the opportunity to go, and I get to go a few places in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in Miami in March with my dear friend Angie, and I was sick as a dog the entire 5 days I was there. And I was a Sunday morning speaker, and Angie spoke Saturday night, so I couldn't come out. Wait, where's Angie? Oh, so I couldn't come out. I couldn't come out because I was sick. I hadn't eaten. I couldn't hold down food. It was just, you know, I thought I flew in. I was a little sick. I thought, oh, it's a 24-hour bug. I'm going to shake it off. No, I was definitely ill. And so while I'm there, what do? Trapped in the room by myself, me in my head, I watch the Titanic. You know what I mean? And so it was just over. And then I go, I have to hear Angie. I'm going to go down. I'm going to rally forth. You know, I hacked through her whole talk. You know, she was talking. She was all spiritual. I would be hacking. You know, and she's all looking. Like, knock it off, you know, but I'm just kidding. I know you were sending me prayers, you know, it just looked like you were saying knock it off. And so Angie, you know, you guys definitely go and hear Angie's talk tomorrow. You know, Angie just puts it down, and then she, well, I'm not going to tell you her talk. It's like a movie, don't tell them, you know what I mean? But she's really good, and I'm like, well, she sings. And I'm like, I don't sing, you know what I mean? I don't want to talk tomorrow, you know, she sings, I can't talk, you know what I mean? And anyway, it worked out, but to this morning, I'm feeling all right, and so I'm okay this morning. Yeah, you know, if you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You've been given the keys of the kingdom. I also want to share with you that this is not a program of whether or not you feel like it. This will be a program of action if you intend to stay. There are a lot of things I don't feel like doing, but the bottom line is I don't feel like dying drunk. Period, point blank, bottom line. That's all there is to it. You know, I am so incredibly grateful to the committee, Mike, Gary, Cookie, John and John, you know what I mean? All the people that I've met, all the people that it takes to put something like this on. We get to come, hang out, you know, and enjoy the meetings and hopefully enjoy, you know, the speakers, but there's a lot of work that it takes, and thank you for allowing me to be able to come here and participate. I want to share with you my statistics. You know, three things that are three of the most important things for me, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the first is my sobriety date, August 16th, 1995. I have 12 continuous years of sobriety. And Saturday it will be 13, gifts accepted. And, you know, so run on over there now and work it out, you know, but, I'm just kidding. You can edit that from the CD if you want, you know, but, you know, 12 years is the longest I've ever had of sobriety in my life. Any time that I have sober is an eternity for me, because when I came to you, I wasn't looking for anything continuous. I came to you tired. The only thing I wanted was a nap and a bite to eat. That's it. That's the best I thought I could do. That's all I thought I deserved. I was so incredibly exhausted when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. The condition in which I came to you is I was 96 pounds because when I drink, I enhance my drinking with things that keep me up for 8 and 9 days straight. And I like it like that. You know what I mean? And so basically, I was very svelte. And some say sickly, I say svelte. And, you know, like a nutritious meal for me would be a Snickers bar every 3 days. You know what I mean? When I came to you, I was missing my front tooth because I'm a mouthy little alcoholic. And apparently, someone begged to differ with something I had to share. When I came to you, I didn't have a strand of hair on my head because when I'm drinking and I enhance my drinking, for lack of a better term, it tends to produce a tweaking sensation. And so I would think things were running around in there. However, I am a problem solver. Yes. So my friend told me, she said, you know, rubbing alcohol sterilizes anything. And I thought, really? Well, I got it. I'm quick, right? So I would drink and do my thing. They would do their thing, you know. And so I just said, you know, wait a minute. You know, I sat him down and I talked to him. And I said, look, I know you're up there. I know you're up there. And you can stay up there, but I'm going to sterilize you, okay? And so, you know, I would do my thing. You know, it's all about cleanliness. I mean, we can all cohabitate, but don't just be rude and filthy, you know? And so I would drink and do my thing. They were doing their thing, and I would just pour rubbing alcohol all over my head, and it was soothing, really. And then, Jesus, is that you? And so then... Yeah. So then, you know, like the whole room is like, who's that? You know what I mean? I don't want to single you out. No, I'm just kidding. And so, writing about me right now, aren't you? I know, work those steps. You know what I mean? And so, anyway, a few people can't write after this meeting. My hair ain't tight enough. But, you know, so... I would sterilize them, and then they just became, you know, immune to it. Like they put on little raincoats, and they were just immune. And so I had to take far drastic measures. And so what I did is I took a pair of scissors. I cut off all my hair. I then took a shaver, and I shaved it to the scalp. Absolutely. Like a baby fresh from the womb. You know what I mean? And it was quite the vision, I can assure you. But by the time I came to you in that condition, all delusions, and all facades have been stripped from me. In order for me to stay here, I have to become right-sized. If I am to be with you, all of that has to be stripped away because this disease wants me dead. It wants me alone in a room with a gun in one hand and a drink in the other. It will never take me away from you when I am in love with you. It has to go about setting up a series of circumstances and events that make it look as if my case is different, that make it look as if you don't have my back, that make it look as if I've made too much a big deal of this to begin with. That's why I have to have the second thing in place, the sponsor. My sponsor is Clancy. He is sober a lot longer than I am. He is far more active than I am, and I am incredibly active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have only ever known active sobriety. And I am grateful it has helped me weather the storms that you too will weather if you stay here. Because life on life's terms will break you in sobriety, and this program will rebuild you. You know, I came to Clancy at 9 years sober. I've always had strong sponsorship. And when I came to him, I was devastated. I had wanted to drink for a year at that point. I had gone through a horrible breakup. The relationship was bad. But why leave? You know what I mean? And you know, and so my former sponsor, who sponsored me during that period, she sponsored me for, you know, the first few years of my sobriety, she would talk to me about this relationship. It was verbally and physically abusive. And I participated equally in both. And she would say to me, Candace, you have to get out of this relationship, Candace. You are living drunk. I'm talking sober, but I'm living drunk. And I would say, no, I can't leave this relationship. That's my soulmate. Right? And so, you know, what do you do when your sponsor clearly has just lost her mind because she's not bringing into alignment the will that we are the exception to the rule and this is going to work out. You know what I mean? No one's going to change behaviors, but it's going to work out. And so... you know, so she was stripped out, and so I just said, I can't talk to her. I need to go to the source himself. So I went to God. God, give me a sign. should I stay in the relationship? The police came. Ooh, not that sign, right? So, you know, what do you do when it just goes down the drain? Well, we got engaged. And yeah, you know what I mean? The hardcore people are like, that's right. I knew it'd work out. Well, anyhow. 6 days later, it was over. And so we were engaged for 6 days, but they were long days. And, you know, after that, I was devastated because in order for me to stay in this relationship, that was my first love. I have been in relationships. I've had people propose, had all of that. And I was never involved. You know what I mean? Like, I just really didn't care. You know what I mean? I thought, well, you're cute. We should hang out. You know, but what happened when this was over, you know, this relationship, because now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, I came to you broken. I started taking these steps, taking our traditions, incorporating them into my life, you know, sponsoring, showing up for commitments, doing whatever you ask me to do, and I've had prior relationships, but I get into this one, my heart is opened up. And I had no idea that in this area I was still living on an old belief system. I had no idea that in the area of intimate relationships, I was coming from a place of being broken. I was coming from a place of my past. I didn't know that. Because in other areas, I had healed. But to stay in this relationship, for the length of time we were together, I had to compromise my truth to make what we were doing okay. I was living in doubt, insecurity the entire time. And I remember thinking that that's what love looked like, sober. And so after sacrificing and compromising who I was to stay in this relationship, going against the advice of my sponsor, which is what I don't do, because I knew this was going to work, we had to work, this is my, so we were going to take this until the twilight, it's going to be okay. And for it to be over, I was devastated. I wanted to die. It hurt to be awake. It hurt to breathe. 6 days later, I was in another relationship. Y'all were tearing up, too. I felt bad. I didn't even want to tell you. You know what I mean? Because they were in the zone with me. I thought, don't tell them. I had to. 6 days later. 6 days later, and it was verbally and it was physically abusive, and the police were back at my house, and I was talking in meetings. I was talking at conferences, and it would be summer. I would have long sleeves on because I had bruises. And the women I sponsored were watching me go through this, and I started losing my babies. I started losing my sober family. My sober family is everything to me. Because I came from a background that is not unified, and Alcoholics Anonymous says I can create the fellowship I crave. I have participated in my babies' weddings. I've thrown them housewarming parties, bridal showers, baby showers. I had never done any of that prior to coming to you. I got to do all of this in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I had worked for, I sacrificed because I was coming from a place of being broken and I didn't know it. And I was frightened and I had lost the connection to a power greater than myself. And so, you know, in the midst of this second relationship, you know, it's something that I also need to share with you. When I got into the second relationship, that person was not available. They were in a relationship, which when I'm untreated is simply a technicality. Yeah. And I, you know, let me just make haste to assure you that's not how I live today, but it's exactly how I started living again in sobriety and untreated alcoholism. Because if I'm broken and unhappy, we're all broken and unhappy. And, you know, what happened is I was in a meeting, and this person was going to that meeting and had been pursuing me for most of the time I was in my relationship, wanted us to have an affair. I said, no, I'm faithful. So now that mine is over, well, you have to work this out. You know what I mean? So I came to the meeting, and I held up my ring finger, signaling the absence of the ring, okay? And I think the indication was clear. And, you know, so we get together, and it's insanity, but, you know, I'm still so broken. There is nothing more painful than to lay down with someone when you are in love with someone else. And I had always lived like that. How do I fix this by that? And so we're in bed one night, and I look over, and I said, if I drink, would you leave me? And they said, no. I said, if I drink, will you drink with me? And they said, yes. Yeah. And, you know, I get that reaction, and I have people get really angry. How could you do that to another alcoholic? Let me tell you something. I am not here this morning to lie to you. You know what I mean? And I'm not here to make it pretty just because my hair looks really cute. You know what I mean? It still hurts, but it looks really cute, you know? I'm going to need to take a Motrin. You know, but anywho, you know, the reality is the disease of alcoholism is a distorting and a disfiguring disease. It destroys everything. It talks about it, and there is a solution. Annihilation of everything. What is annihilation? Utter destruction. So I'm lying in bed, and I ask, and they're willing to give up their sobriety because they are so in love with me that they think this will keep me. I'm not domestic when I drink. You know what I mean? That's all I'm going to say about that. But if you want to hold on to the dream, work it out. You know, and so the reality is that there was no alcohol in the house. There was no, or I would have been drunk. There comes a time when we have no effective mental defense. It has to come from a power greater than myself. I hadn't been treating my spiritual condition. I wasn't connected to a power greater than myself. There was just no alcohol in the house. And so the next day I got a hold of my sponsor, my former sponsor, Gloria Decker, whom I love with everything in me, is very sick. She has a rare lung disease, and that's why I ended up having the change. I hadn't been able to get a hold of her. I was self-sponsored at that point. And I would say, well, what would I tell my babies if they were in the situation? I would just run it by myself. Don't try that. You know what I mean? It doesn't work. And so, you know, this scenario, you know, and I know people are still offended by it, but, you know, I think of Bill's story. I love Bill. Love Bill. Bill was just whacked out. You know what I mean? And thank God he didn't do crack, you know, because he was already so gone. He was so gone. You know, because when I'm reading the big book, you know, I just, you know, Bill would just take you through the highs and the lows, you know, and Bill would say for 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. You know, I fared forth in high hopes. I'm like, go, Bill, go, you know. And then he says, then the frightful day came when I drank once more. I'm like, no, Bill, no, you know. But there's that part in the book where he's talking about his friend coming over. He used to drink with his friend. Bill sets the alcohol on the table. He's ready to get his drink on. And, you know, and you just start salivating at that point. You know what I mean? And so Bill's friend comes in, but he's sober. Ooh, little glitch. But really, it's only a technicality when you're drinking. Because Bill says, clearly, unmindful of his welfare. I get that you're sober and you're on a path, but I'm not. And I'm hoping that if I drink openly with you, you will join me. So that night, when I was in that bed with my partner without a God, I'm miserable. I want company. And the next day when I got a hold of my sponsor, she said, Candace, why don't you start living the book and stop quoting it? She said, what you have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of your spiritual condition. I have been treating my ego, but not my spirit. I was running on devastation and broken dreams, and I had no idea what to do, and I had to make amends to that individual. I broke it off, and I think it was a month later they got drunk. I cannot make someone drink, but I am very clear as to my part in that equation. I do not live like that anymore. I know what it's like to walk in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and have people whispering your name because of your conduct. I've lived through it. I am so very grateful to the principles of our program. I'm so very grateful that I am taught to suit up and show up no matter how I feel. I'm so very grateful for commitments because during that period, that's how I stayed with you. I didn't want to be here. I wanted to be drunk. Being sober hurt. I don't believe that when people are sober a period of time and they leave Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't always think it's because they forget the pain of their last drink. I believe that the pain of living sober starts to outweigh the pain of their last drink. It is so incredibly vital that I stay in this process and that I incorporate that 10th step into my life, because what happens is my daily behaviors can accumulate like a thin film of dust. And it gets to the point where it's so thick I can't wash it off. I can't scrub it off. So I become desperate in my efforts to get free, to get clear. But there is only a spiritual solution for me. There is no middle of the road solution for this type of alcoholic. You know, and I remember I had a greeting commitment during that period, and I was just miserable, ooh, in pain. You know what I mean? And so you'd walk in the door, I'd be crying. If you want what we have. You know what I mean? But I say, you need to see me not just when I'm taking a cake, but you need to see me when I'm hanging on with everything I got in me. You need to see me when I put my foot so far in my mouth that all I can do is sit in my seat and cry. You need to see me go through that because you need to see me walk through it sober. So that when your turn comes, you'll know you don't have to drink. You know, a little voice from the back. God, is that you again? So, you know, by the time I came to Clancy, I was just out of ideas. It's a beautiful place. If you're here right now, if you're here and you're new, I hope you're hurting like hell, because this program works better when you are, because then there's some willingness and you become a little bit more teachable, a little bit more willing to be uncomfortable. I find that too many of our new friends are not willing to be uncomfortable, but you're already uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? I was uncomfortable when I came to you. I had just became comfortable with being uncomfortable. And then when I stopped drinking, I became really uncomfortable, and AA started asking me to do things that stretched me out. It was stretching me out because I had to be reconfigured. I had to be reformed. Stay with us. Stay with us through that process. Get in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. The view from the center looks much different than when you are on the fringes. When you're on the fringes, you have people saying, why do you have to go to all those meetings? Why do you have to check with your sponsor? Why do you have to pick this person up? They're 20 minutes out your way. You know what I mean? When you're in the center, you're already in the car going to pick them up, and you've already checked in with your sponsor, and you're talking to your sober sisters. It's very different. We are a family here. We are creating miracles here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We are people that are drunk. Society has said that's it. You will never walk a free man or a free woman. You will never live in dignity. You will never have any integrity. Yet we put on dresses. We have clean underwear. Bonus. You know what I mean? Know what type of drunk you were. You know. So anywho, I digress. So I came to Clancy. I was in a lot of pain. And, you know, I love my sponsor. He's just cute. He's feisty. And I love him. And I was so out of control when I came to him. You know, he's loving in his way. And so we would talk, and I would want to share with him my ideas, which subsequently were keeping me thirsty. You know what I mean? And so I would be on the phone, and he would ask me, well, what happened? But I don't want to just tell him what happened. I want to give him the buildup so he can understand why I did what I did. You know what I mean? And he would say, no, tell me what happened. And so I would tell him, and he would say, you're crazy and immature. Click, and hang up. But I wasn't done talking. You know what I mean? I thought it was a bit rude. And so I was holding onto the phone, but I would be gripping the phone. I'd be pissed off. Tears would be screaming. I would be like, he hung up in my face. You know what I mean? I'd call my friend, hollering in the phone, and he was like, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to follow the direction. You know what I mean? I'm not that whacked out. But I'm so grateful that he cared more about my life than my feelings. He cared enough about me to talk to me straight. In his love, under his guidance, his direction, under his uncompromising devotion to this program, I was able to feel secure enough to sit here and start hearing the message again, because I never stopped going to meetings. I never stopped doing the deal, but I was so broken, and I felt so far, I was just so closed off. And I started coming back into the light, and what I had to do during that period is I had to change my conduct. You know, the one thing I have learned, because I had to redefine what is love, what does it look like? What does it consist of? What is a relationship? What does it look like? What does commitment mean? What does loyalty mean? Because I was basing that from old ideas. I had to get some new information. And while I went through that, the most important thing I did is I closed my legs. You have to hear that. You have to hear that. Let me tell you something. I sponsor a lot of girls, and I have a few newer women, and they are terrified of being by themselves. Terrified. Ladies, if we come in here sick, we are making choices based on that information. I had to have an opportunity to sit down, to get with Candace, and to get with my God. I had to go within. My dear friend Lynette always says, if you don't go within, you will go without. I stayed in that sick relationship because I felt that was the best I deserved. I thought that was love. I felt because I had done all those things before I came to you, this is all I could hope for. That's not true. In step three, it says we were reborn. We are made anew. It doesn't matter what I've done. It's all been wiped clean. It's about my conduct here and now. I had no idea that I am already enough. So if you are here right now, today, understand this. Here, now, you are enough, period. You are enough. Make them work for it. They think men don't want what they do want to work for. They want you to make them wait. They're like, no, we don't. Yes, you do. Make them open the car door. You know what I mean? It's just like, let's bring it back. I wanted to be treated like a lady, but I insisted on acting like a broad. And I wondered why it wasn't working out. You know, when I sat still, I was so broken, I couldn't daydream anymore. I couldn't do anything, and I started to buy myself flowers. I had to figure out what I liked, what makes me happy. We talk about being happy, joyous, and free. What is happiness? What does it look like? What is joy? What brings me joy? I'll tell you, I love cartoons. Love them. You know what I mean? I own Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Bee Movie, Finding Nemo. Love them. You know what I mean? When I went to see Alvin and the Chipmunks, it was in the afternoon, and, you know, there were, like, kids there and their parents and me, you know what I mean? And so I don't care, and so I'm sitting there, and I kind of had a bond with this little kid, you know, little boy, him and his grandmother, and so, like, they weren't really laughing, like, he and I were laughing, and I would look over him, we would laugh, you know what I mean? And it's great, it brings me joy, I like that. I have coloring books. I started coloring during that period because I couldn't dream. I couldn't create anymore. I was so broken. And so I got coloring books. I had the 64 box of crayons. I want you to know I now have the 96 box of crayons. Yeah! Happy, joyous, and free. In order for me to get free, I need to know what is keeping me in bondage. I have to be prepared to uncover, discover, and discard that which is blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. I'm doing all this work not to sit here and be miserable and be bitter and not be happy for you when you have a success in your life. I'm doing this work because I want to be free. I want to be light in spirit. You know, and my sponsor, Clancy, has helped me do that. I've been with him for almost 5 years now. I adore him. I can't say it enough. If you have a sponsor you can't tell everything to, get another sponsor. You know, the whole, they don't like me, who cares? You know what I mean? You're not going to them to be your pal, you're going to them to get some direction, because if you give yourself direction, you too will get thirsty. That's the deal. My home group is Pacific Group, very active group. I'm a very active member in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be around people that are excited to be sober. You're asking me to do an awful lot, and if everyone's just like, you know, glum and morose every day, I don't know, drinking might be better, you know, and so it's good for me to come in where people are excited about sobriety, where this is a priority, where you don't squeeze it in the middle of wherever you're going, it's priority, it sets the tone for what you do. You know, I want to share this with you, it's in the 12 and 12, and I started sharing it a few years ago because I just love it. I remember I went to a recovery home, and a recovery home has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing at all. We're not affiliated. I went to a recovery home, and I'm grateful for my experience because I had come from living on the street, homeless. And is that my friend? Okay. That's her friend. It's like a conspiracy. Stop it. You know, so I am... The recovery home gave me the opportunity to sit still and be safe long enough so I could hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous brought in by members on H&I panels, of which I'm also a long-time active member. I have 3 panels. I've had them all for 12 years. You know, and I remember we were in a 12 and 12 study, and they were reading what I'm going to share with you today. They were reading from Tradition 3. And what I'm sharing with you is on page 140 in the 12 and 12. It talks about when AA was very new. And it says, we were resolved to admit nobody to AA but that hypothetical class of people we termed pure alcoholics. Except for their guzzling and the unfortunate results thereof, they could have no other complications. So beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. Huh. It says... It says, yes, sir, we cater only to pure and respectable alcoholics. Now, I don't know about you. But chances are, if I'm pure and respectable, I ain't alcoholic. And but then they so boldly list, you know what, beggar, tramp, queer, plain crack. I'm 4 out of 5 right there. So if all these were in place, I would never have had an opportunity to come and sit with you in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you hang in there with me, and we go to page 141, it says, could we then foresee that troublesome people were to become our principal teachers of patience and tolerance? Could any then imagine a society which would include every conceivable kind of character and cut across every barrier of race, creed, politics, and language with ease? Now they're talking about the Alcoholics Anonymous. I know, they're just talking about the language of the heart. It doesn't matter where you work, what your religious affiliation is. It doesn't matter what your sexual preference is, if you've even figured it out. First 2 years are sketchy. You know what I mean? More will be revealed. You know. All those things don't matter. If you have a desire to stop drinking, we have a set of actions and principles that will change your life. This is a program of action. It is not a program of whether or not I feel like it. When I was little, my grandmother raised me. She loved me. She loved me. Everything in me responded to her love. She loved me. In her love, I felt safe. I felt secure. I felt protected. I felt like nothing could ever harm me. Have you ever had that type of love? I had it with her. When I was little, I was afraid of the dark, and so at night I slept next to her. And as she slept, I would watch her breathe. She would inhale. I would inhale. She would exhale. I would exhale. Because if she died, I wanted to die with her. That's the depth of love I had for my grandmother. My mother is an alcoholic. She is an alcoholic by her own admission. She was young when she had me. She was not done doing what she needed to do as an alcoholic woman. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it today. My mom is very well endowed. She believes in packing her pistol in her bosom because she's quirky like that. And so the way my mother would communicate her needs and wants is she would call my grandmother up on the phone. I always knew who was on the other end. My grandmother would grip the receiver real tight, and that little vein would pop out right in the center of her forehead. And so, you know, she would make some incessant demand, to which my grandmother would look at the phone and respond, absolutely not. There would go the phone. A short while later, my mom would pop over and just shoot out all the windows. Now, let's just say I was really clear, I did not want what she had. There are other cousins and uncles in my family who also suffer from the disease of alcoholism. But that is not why I'm an alcoholic. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous clearly explains to me that when I, not them, ingest alcohol into my system, it's going to set up a phenomenon of craving that will ensure I will do any and everything I have to do in order to get another drink. The way the disease manifests in my family is through a lot of violence. Now, a lot of the members favored shooting. I favored stabbing. Tomato, tomato, really. You know. So, it's safe to say that when we all got together, at some point, the police were going to be present. So I'll just give you like a holiday at my mom's house. Okay, so my mother is an excellent cook. My mother's a big girl. She's an excellent cook. She cooks from scratch. I don't cook from scratch. Nor do I feel the need to. No, I cook by the box. And the directions on the box must be clearly illuminated. if I am to prepare anything. So, if it says to measure a quarter of a cup, I must measure precisely a quarter of a cup, because if I go even a hair over, I will pour it out. I have to begin again. That is not how my mother cooks. My mother's like a smidgen of this, a dab of that. Fabulous creation will be had, right? So if she's cooking, I got to go. Understand, you will get a meal at my mom's house, but it just may come with a little something extra. The way you want to gauge when it's time to leave is by the music that's playing. So I would go over, it's early afternoon, she's getting her drunk on for sure, but that's okay because the music would be upbeat, the spinners, the four tops, it's okay. You know, she's continuing to drink, Diana Ross and the Supremes, we're good. She's drinking, it's early dusk, Sam Cooke, uh-oh. Yes, because at the Sam Cooke juncture, okay, you want to get the plate, you want to get the foil. You want to lay them side by side, okay? It's like a sprinter. At this point, you want to start getting limber. You want to get loose, you know? By the time nightfall hit, Billie Holiday. The only word I have is run. You know what I mean? Because what's happened is the metamorphosis now has occurred. You know, she's been drinking. At this point, she's been thinking about what's gone wrong, as reflected by the music, you know. And so now she's going to cry, and she's only going to cry for a minute or two, then she's going to get pissed off and want to fight, you know. And so you would get a meal, but it just may come with a little something extra, you know. So you might limp out, but you'd have food. And, you know, when I got into junior high, my friends were drinking and having a good time. I wanted to have a good time, too. Very simple in the beginning. But here's what happens for me when I take a drink of alcohol. When I take a drink of alcohol, I cease to care about you. Matter of fact, I don't care about you before I take a drink of alcohol. Once I take the drink, I'm now inclined to share with you that I don't care about you. So please resist the urge to pull me to the side and tell me how I have wronged you, how I have imposed myself upon you, because really, you know what I mean? And my friends would come to me, tear-stained faces and angst over what I'd done the night before, and they would want to tell me, like, everything. And I'm thinking, why? Did I ask you? You know what I mean? And so they want to tell me. You know what I realize? That we as alcoholics get over things way quicker than everyone else does. You know, 2 weeks later, they're still holding on to it. I'm like, girl, let it go, you know. And so they would tell me all this stuff, and then they would pause. So I would pause, for effect mostly, you know. And then I would look at them sensing that they needed something, and I would say, well, that's unfortunate. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. You know, and so they talk about me in the book. It says that I step on the toes of my fellows, and they retaliate seemingly without provocation. Not only am I mashing toes, but I'm wearing the highest of heels at all times. I'm going to tell you who I am without the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous is I'm more of a column 1-2 type of gal. I live in the who you are and what you did to piss me off. It's not until I come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous broken and devastated from this disease that I'm even willing to consider columns 3 and 4. What is this affecting? Is it my self-esteem? How? Is it my ambitions? How? Is it my security? How? Is it my personal relations? How? Column 4, what is my part? Because it says, did I not myself set the ball rolling? I'm making decisions based on self. It's creating mayhem. It talks about it, even in my best moments, I'm a producer of confusion rather than harmony. In my best moments, with steps. That's scary. It's tight. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm drinking, I'm doing my thing. I was working at this department store, Bullock's Westwood. It's in California. It's no longer there, actually. And it's a really nice department store. You know, when you're a teenager, you work in retail, it's okay. Normally, they schedule you on the weekends. I'm okay with that. But this particular weekend, there was a beach party, which, of course, equated to free booze. And so, you know, we already know I'm not going to work, right? But I can't just cold call. No. I got to get in a character. You know what I mean? So as I'm standing in the bathroom in front of the mirror, I can feel the sickness descend upon me. So that by the time I go to lift the receiver, I can barely hold it because I'm in a weakened condition, you know. And I remember waiting for my boss to get on the phone, because I'm about to tell this elaborate story. In my mind, it can't be simple, because that's not believable. Like, the more outlandish, they'll believe it. And you know what I mean? And so I'm waiting for him to get on the phone, and my heart's pounding because I know I'm about to lie, right? And so he gets on the phone, and just as I begin, he put me on hold. Oh, what? Here I take the time to come up with this story for you? And you put me on hold? I don't think so, you know? And so what I did is I marched off to the beach party, and I share that with you because that's how I drank. I did what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And if you hung out with me, you were going to do what I wanted you to do, or you were going to get gone. I am a team player, my team, you know. So the following year, I'm living with my godmother, and she was leaving for a week to attend the Black Caucus Conference in Washington. She had purchased a Mercedes 6 months prior. She did what any adult would do with their vehicle. She took her car, parked it in her driveway. She took her keys, placed them in the candy dish in her home. The only thing missing from that equation was me. And as luck would have it, I was going to this club called the Whiskey later on that night. What better way to go to a club than in a brand new Mercedes? I just get all warm and fuzzy thinking about it. You know what I mean? I do. So that whole day was spent with Candace and Self. How Self would be featured. What Self would debut. How Self would be presented. You know how we are. And so as I'm driving the car consumed with Self, I ran into someone else's car. Whoops. You know. So my hat's off to the person that has a valid driver's license and insurance, because it wasn't happening for me. I made like I was going to do the appropriate thing, pull over, exchange information. But, you know, it wasn't my car. I didn't have any information to exchange. And when I'm drinking, I don't do the appropriate thing, you know. So I drive the car back into the driveway. I take the keys. I place them back into the candy dish. I go upstairs. I call my friend, and I tell her, we're taking a cab. We're going to the club. I also had an inkling of a notion that my godmother would be none too pleased about this car situation. She was, in fact, quite peeved. She had seen the movie Tough Love. I've never seen this movie. I don't desire to see this movie. But the effect it had on her was profound, I can assure you. So after having seen this movie, she was so inspired, she drew up a contract of things I was expected to do for having wrecked her car. And I remember she was talking to me about it. She was very angry. Her little neck veins kept popping. You know what I mean? And she was like, what you did is a vicious, malicious, I don't know, it just sounded like wah, wah, wah. You know what I mean? And so as I'm looking at her, you know, I just was captivated by my own thought, which is what normally happens, you know. And my thought was, you have insurance. Why are you tripping? Right? That's alcoholism. Alcoholism will never allow me to step into column four. Alcoholism will never allow me. Untreated alcoholism will never allow me to live in accountability. It doesn't occur to me that I have violated her trust, I've damaged her personal property, I've disrespected her home. Doesn't even occur to me. I can't get past, you have insurance, why are you coming down on me? That's who I am today if I don't have any principles in my life. So what ended up happening is I ended up moving out. Let's just say the atmosphere remained tense, you know, and she was not willing to turn it over. And so, hostile environment, you know what I mean? And so following year, I'm working in Beverly Hills. I meet a couple of people. One of them gave me the opportunity to work for a record label. And when they hired me at the label, they hired me as a receptionist. I like to think of myself more of a visionary. Some say delusional. I say visionary. So, yes, technically they hired me as a receptionist, but really, I thought they were grooming me for a CEO. You know what I mean? And so I always walked around assuming the posture, waiting for the tap, you know. And I ended up getting promoted. I worked in promotions for a long time with a lot of artists on multi-platinum projects, and it was grand, and we were cute, and it was fabulous. But here's the thing. The more I got promoted, the more I got loaded. A dear friend who's an old-timer in this program always says something that hits me to my core. She says, alcohol gave me the wings to fly, and then it took away the sky. Alcohol allowed all my dreams to come true. I'm not here because I've never lived my dreams. I'm here because alcohol dictated everything I did. It told me when I would do it, how long I would do it, when I started doing it again, how it would be done. If you would have encountered me during that period of my life, you would have thought I was absolutely the most self-assured, confident individual you would ever come across. But I'm going to share with you that basically every day I would be in Issey Miyake, Chanel, Bitadini, head to toe. I felt like a little kid playing dress up. I felt like at any moment you were going to find out that my mother is an abusive parent who lived in South Central, and you were going to look at me and say, you are not one of us. You do not belong here. Get out. That is alcoholism. Alcoholism centers in fear, lack, limitation. You're not going to make the grade. They're not going to want you. The rug's going to be pulled out from underneath you any moment. I am so grateful to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous that have come here, that have taught me to take contrary action. I am so grateful to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous that have applied these principles, that have allowed me to walk through my fears. I used to suffer from tremendous fear and anxiety and heavy, heavy depression, which I treat through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I treat through exercise in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I treat through prayer and meditation in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I believe there are different forms of bondage. I am grateful to the members that taught me how to walk through these things. What happened is during that period, my grandmother passed. And my grandmother was everything. She was the end-all, be-all to me. She was the cat's meow. When I was little, my grandmother used to bring home a lemon meringue pie every week because it was my favorite pie from Marie Callender's. Every week, she brought this pie home. And she had all these old cookbooks, and so one night I asked her if I could make the pie. And she goes, yeah, when we go to the store tomorrow, we'll get all the stuff. And so I wrote down everything in order of importance because I'm anal. And so we go to the store. We get all the ingredients, and then later on that night before she went to bed, she goes, are you going to make the pie? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make the pie. So I had everything laid out. You know what I mean? Because I have to see it and know it's there. And so I make the filling, and then I get to the meringue part, which should be the easiest part. So I had the egg white, and I had the sugar, and I had the fork, right? And so I'm whipping the meringue. You know, whipping it. And I'm waiting for it to get fluffy. It's not getting fluffy. So I'm whipping it. And I'm whipping it. And it's not getting fluffy. And I'm now it's 10 minutes. And I'm over it. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, it's not getting fluffy. So then I take a little bit more sugar, okay, put it in there, and I'm whipping. It's not getting fluffy. So I take some cornstarch, right, just, you know, thicken it right up. And so I'm whipping, and it's not getting fluffy. So I take a little vanilla extract, because it's vanilla, and then a little ice cream. And so, it's vanilla. And so, you know, I'm whipping. And anyway, by the time I got done with it, it was meringue-ish. And so, like the whole pie thing really traumatized me is what happened, because it was just, oh. And so I put it in the refrigerator to forget about it. I didn't want to deal with it. So the next day, we're hanging out, middle of the afternoon, and she asked me, she said, did you ever make the pie? Now, here's the funny thing. The funny thing is that she had been in the refrigerator like 5 or 6 times, but she didn't recognize it. And so I said, yeah, I made the pie, but it didn't come out good. And she said, that's okay, give me a slice. I said, no, I love my grandmother. I'm not going to give her this pie. You know what I mean? I'm not going to eat this pie. And so she said, no, give me a slice. And so I thought she was going to do the grandmother thing, you know, take a slice, take a bite and say, it'll be better next time. And what she did is she ate the entire slice. And what that is unconditional love. And then she said, it'll be better next time. But, you know, but I share that because that's the type of love that fills you up every space in your being, in your spirit. I've only had that type of love twice in my life, with her and when I came to you. It's that type of love. And so when I found out my grandmother passed, to be honest, I don't recall having any emotions connected to that moment. I was never present in the moment. I was always so preoccupied with getting loaded, staying loaded, how you were going to piece up to get me loaded, that I was just never aware of what was going on around me. But I remember going home looking at my stuff. And I'm not sure if it was a week to a month or a week to 2 months. I just know that my stuff was no longer enough. And that was a frightening place for this alcoholic, because at that time in my life, my stuff defined my place in society. It was very important, the label I worked for, the artists I represented, the title I held, where I lived, who I knew. My friendships were not based on shared goals and common ambition. They were based on you're cute, I'm cute, we need to hang out. No depth and weight needed, don't even bring it up. I came from a world of smoke and mirrors. I came from a world of talk so fast and dazzle them, they don't see what's really going on. It is not until I came to you broken and devastated that I found that this is an inside job. Money, property, and prestige will not keep me from wanting to put a gun to my head at 2 o'clock in the morning if I don't have a God of my understanding. It doesn't matter how cute my partner is. It doesn't matter where I work. It doesn't matter. It won't fill me up from the inside out. So what happened is I'm looking around and my stuff's not enough and my head is talking, the little Damien kids that reside in there. And they told me that I was living and working in a world built on make-believe. They told me that I needed to get real, but I didn't know how to get real. I just knew how to get loaded. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about why we drink. In the paraphrase, it says that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That the sensation is so elusive, although they admit it injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the truth from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I'm going to tell you why I remember it, because it resonates in my spirit. Every time I took a drink, the sensation produced was so superb, so magnificent, that even though I knew it was going to cause me chaos, confusion, insanity, jail, always a bonus, even though I knew every time I took a drink, this is what was going to happen, when alcohol is working in my life, the sensation produced is unparalleled. It is so superb, so magnificent, that I'm willing to go for broke to get it. And then it tells me after a while, I don't know what's real from what's not, because I'm making decisions based on self. It says my alcoholic life becomes the only normal one. Something that may have been inconceivable or unacceptable just a week or so prior is now par for the course. It's now all in a day's drink. It's like I've been doing it the whole time, and I know I have it. And so what happened is I resigned from that industry, and I had a very expensive habit. I am not a periodic. I drink, period. And so what I did is I made a decision to market myself in exchange for a drink. I stepped out there. I did everything I needed to do to get what I had to have. And if I ever stop applying the principles of this program in my life, I will walk back out there one more time and I will do it all over again. Because I firmly believe once you have done something, it is not a big deal to do it all over. The shock value has worn off. My disease will now tell me this time it'll be different. My disease will tell me if you flip it like this, come at it like that, we can work it out. That's why I have to stay grounded in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am at my best when I'm in the center of you, when I take you with me throughout my day. I'm out there. I don't take care of myself. I became pregnant. I would never do anything to jeopardize the life of an unborn child. I would never do it. But I told you, I am not a periodic. When I became pregnant, I made a decision to terminate that pregnancy. I am not going to share with you my views on that personally because they are an outside issue. I will share with you that I've been in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I have heard members, men and women, share that when they were little, they were left with people they should never have been left with. And things that never should have gone on happened to them. I didn't want to be one of those types of parents. When I'm drinking and hanging out with people, I don't do background checks. So I could not with 100% certainty guarantee the safety of a young child, and I didn't want to risk it. So when I made the decision to terminate that pregnancy, I was then made aware via every news station, every radio station, every TV station that a member of my family had been arrested for murdering my 8-year-old cousin, dismembering her and burying her in cement. And that person was my mom. There just comes a time for everyone when your life stops and it stands still, and that time came for me. And at that precise moment, I remember thinking that the way I was living right then would be the way I would live for the rest of my life. I remember at that precise moment thinking anything of beauty, of value, of worth is no longer afforded to me. Forget about it. Let it go. I had always believed once your destiny had been determined, nothing could ever be done to change it. It is not until I came to you broken, spiritually devastated, that I have found if you want what we have and you are prepared to take the actions outlined in this book, your entire life can be reshaped. This is not a program of whether or not I feel like it. It is only a program of action. I went through that pregnancy as if I were not pregnant. And a lot of times the only reason that I was allowed to keep my life is because they would discover I was pregnant. And I remember going into labor for 17 hours giving birth to my daughter Serenity. I had no idea I was going to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I named her Serenity because it was the most chaotic time in my life and I just wanted something different. But here's the deal. If nothing changes, nothing changes. If I wanted something different, I had to do something different, and I didn't know that. I had no idea. So, you know, she was 3 days old when I left the hospital, and I remember when I was holding her, she kept shaking, like little tremors, because she was detoxing. When you want to know what it's like to live in hell, when you want to understand step one, it's when you want with everything in you to be done and you're not. When you want with everything in you to not pick up that drink because you know what it's going to cost you and you pick it up anyway, welcome to hell. Welcome to step one. Without help, it is too much for me. I left the hospital. She was 3 days old. I had to get busy coming to you, and my journey involved no grace, no dignity. It's not how I live when I'm unprincipled. And I told you the condition in which I was brought to you. I came into the recovery home, and I had been there for about 4 months before I even told anyone I had a daughter. Because when my daughter was 6 months old, I had just stopped praying for her altogether. Because in my mind, I was never going to have any other life than I had. I was never going to see her. So what's the use? Just block it out. I remember coming home and the people in my building saying, "Where's your daughter? Didn't you have a kid?" They had heard I had a little girl. And I said, "She's going to be home soon." So when I got sober, 4 months into my sobriety, she's almost 2 years sober, I tell the director of the facility I have a daughter because they had women there that had children. And I thought, maybe you could help me. Maybe I could be a mom too. Maybe you could help me do it differently. Maybe you could show me how to be gentle. Maybe I could have a chance. So she said, "Where is she?" I said, "I don't know." She gave me one number. It led to a series of numbers. And what happened is they said in the end that I was no longer considered her parent. They said that my parental rights had been terminated, and I was devastated. I can do everything when I'm drinking. I do it all when I'm drinking. But to get sober and to sit in my own skin without anything affecting me from the neck up, please give me a spiritual solution. I hear so many people talk about getting things back. I'm going to come to AA. I'm going to get this back. I'm going to get that back. I hope you get sober just to get sober. Because we don't get everything back here. My daughter just turned 14, but when she turns 18, if she ever wants to find me, I need to be sober. A woman of dignity, a woman of integrity, a woman of grace. I can't have that without the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't have that living on old ideas. I can't have that cutting corners in my sobriety. I can't have that doing only what's convenient for me when I feel like doing it. What about the person that sits 3 rows behind me that looks forward to seeing me every Wednesday night? I keep thinking it's all about me. It's not all about me. I hear so many, you know, "When am I going to get mine? When am I going to get mine? When am I going to get..." I got mine when I got sober. I have dignity. You know, a few months ago, when my daughter turned 14 in March, I am very involved in the recovery homes. I don't work in recovery, but I'm very involved in recovery homes. I volunteer. And I asked the director if I could throw a birthday party for my daughter. And so what I did is I catered it from start to finish. The cake, the ice cream, the food, bought presents for all the kids. I said, "I need a head count." So there were 16 kids. And so all of my girls, the women I sponsor, came over. They helped me decorate. We played games with the kids. You know, they're really hardcore with musical chairs. You know what I mean? Like, don't let them not get a chair. You know what I mean? And then we sang happy birthday to my daughter. We sang happy birthday to Serenity. And they got gifts, and this one little girl had gotten a doll And she came up to me after the party was over, and I was just doing so good, and it was great, and she said, "Thank you for the party." And I'm like, "Oh, you're welcome." And she held up her doll. I'm like, "Oh, what a pretty doll." And she said, "I named her Serenity." And I just lost it. I said, you know what I mean? It was like, you know what I mean? But it's beautiful because this is how I heal. We're talking about living amends. I hear just so many outlandish things when I'm in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, things that are not in the book I read. I hear things like, "I'm going to place myself at the top of my amends list." Are you kidding me? So let me just to clarify my thinking. So what you're saying is you have ran through these people's lives, you've lied, you've cheated, you've disrespected them, and one more time you leap to the top of your amends list. Right. Yay. Okay. I'll be here when you get done. You know what I mean? So just for that day, when I was 7 years sober, I threw a party at Chuck E. Cheese, where a kid can be a kid, you know. And the deal for that was I told my friends to bring a gift, not for me. That doesn't apply to you guys for Saturday, but I told them... I told my friends, I'm kidding. You know what I mean? I told my friends, I said, bring a gift for a child ages 1 through 7. And so they brought like all these new things, diapers, toys, coloring books, bottles, clothes, whatever you can name, there was there. And I had reserved a party for 30 people. It was close to 70 that showed up. And we had just bags and bags of things. And I donated it to 2 recovery homes. I'm talking about living amends here, because sometimes it hurts like I can't tell you to know that I have a child and I don't know what she looks like, to know that she's about to enter adolescence and I don't know what she's going through. I just pray to God that she's in a family that's safe and that they're loving her and that they're not harming her or touching her inappropriately. Because when you come from the background I come from, when I got sober, I would hear a kid crying and I would get so freaked out that I would have to turn off everything in my apartment. And I would have to go to every window to hear where the cry was coming from. And then I would have to time it to see if I felt they were crying too long, if something was happening. And I would call the police over and over. It's alcoholic torture. And I had to get some freedom. At 5.5 years sober, I made amends to my mother. I didn't think I would ever do it. I am the eldest of 3. There's a younger brother and sister who lived with her, who have had broken bones, torture, things that I am never going to share from a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't want you to take it with you in your psyche. I said I will never make amends to her, and the time came. It's easy to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you get so spiritual, you start levitating. You know what I mean? Let us love you until you can love yourself. You know what I mean? It's very different when you have to take these principles outside of meetings and you have to apply them to the people that have harmed you most. That's when your spiritual condition is defined. This is not easy. This is not for the faint of heart. It takes work. Anyone that tells you there's no work in being here is simply not doing any. I don't drink near beer because I'm not near sober. You know what I mean? It's that type of deal. And I made amends to my mother. I wrote her. She's in prison where she will remain. She wrote me back. She said she is born again, as many people who go to prison are, no opinion. You know what I mean? And so we correspond, and sometimes I can't open her letters because it hurts too bad. Some days I can't open her letters because it's too real. There are years when I take my cake, I'm sitting there, and I want my mother to be in the front row, but that's not the hand I was dealt. It does not mean that my case is different. I have learned to get my love from the women here in Alcoholics Anonymous that have come, that have done the work, that have healed, that show me how to love, that I can love my babies and I can love you. I believe you are a newcomer until you take all 12 steps. All 12. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these, the implication is that you have done the preceding steps. So if you are sitting here for years in meetings and you have yet to take 12 steps, that tells me your primary purpose and my primary purpose is not the same. And I'm reluctant to hang out with you because there may come a time when I'm going through a dark period where your solution may not be a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It may be something else. I'm very careful what I do today with my sobriety. After coming through almost 2 years of wanting to drink and being able to stay here, I'm very careful with my conduct and what I do. I have to change my conduct. I used to think it was a compliment when someone was in a relationship and they would flirt with me. I thought it was because I was so cute. No, that's not what it means. It's disrespectful. They're disrespecting me. They're disrespecting their partner. They're disrespecting themselves. But when I don't feel enough, I accept behavior like that. See, I know I'm enough today. And remember, ladies, when you leave, you're enough. It's already done. It is in divine order right now. You know, this is good. And I'm good. And I'm going to go to the beach after this. And and I'm going to tan because I'm feeling a little pale. And be glistening, you know. So I just want to share this spiritual experience, and I'm going to have a seat. But really, I thank you so much for allowing me to be here, and I look forward to just making some friends over the weekend because my job is done. You know what I mean? I'm hanging out, you know, and support my friends Bobby and Andy. You know, this is good because we have friendships forming, and it's important to me. You know, and my dear friend Khalifa is like my sister. You know what I mean? Like, I love her. She has my back. It's a good deal. Sometimes life on life's terms can suck big time. You know what I mean? It's good to know you have a friend in your corner. Like, I don't take those things lightly. You've taught me how to be a friend, to suit up and show up, to have integrity, to not lie, to not deceive. You've taught me that, and I have some people I call friends in my corner, and I look forward to making some more. You know, a spiritual experience, one of the most beautiful spiritual experiences for me, and I've had many, I continue to have many, is to look in the eyes of one of the ladies I sponsor over the flickering flame of a one-year candle. Having seen her come in this program broken and devastated from the disease of alcoholism, watching her as she starts to apply our principles and our traditions in her life, as she starts to walk in her own stride, in her own grace, in her own dignity. Looking her in the eye as she blows out that flickering one-year flame, that is a spiritual experience. This is a journey you must not miss, but if you want what we have, then I can only suggest that you do what we do. Thank you.